Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, April 1st, 2022. Industry Not Impressed by SPR Release by Mella McEwen. Continuing to seek ways to lower energy prices, President Biden on Thursday ordered the release of a record-setting 180 million barrels of oil from the nation's Strategic Petroleum Reserve at the rate of 1 million barrels a day over the next 6 months. The president said the release would serve as a bridge while U.S. producers ramp up domestic oil and gas production, which is forecast to grow by 1 million barrels a day this year and an additional 700,000 barrels a day next year. Congressman August Pfluger, the San Antonio Republican, whose district includes Midland, issued a statement calling the SPR release purely political and criticizing plans to fine operators not producing from federal lands. President Biden is putting our country into a dangerous situation by drawing down the strategic reserve to the lowest level since 1984, with the largest release of our national reserve ever, $1 million per day for the next 6 months. The SPR is a huge strategic importance to our national security and economic stability in times of war. Our foreign adversaries know the Biden administration lacks a strong energy strategy, and his demonization of American oil and gas producers with his policies is shameful and purely political. Rather than tapping into our reserves, President Biden should be approving pipelines, cutting the bureaucratic red tape, and fixing the supply chain issues that oil and gas producers are experiencing every day. The administration needs to be advocating for American producers, not against them. President Biden must not play politics with such a critical issue. Energy security is national security. What we see is the administration nibbling at the edges rather than creating a long-term strategic energy policy that would benefit the U.S. and allies. What is needed, Staples said, is for administration to reset its energy policy and unleash American energy leadership. For the last several years, they have discouraged energy growth, and it's time to treat American oil and gas as an asset and not a liability. Pointing to a national rig count that is up 60% over the previous year and grew by 20 rigs in March, 14 of which were in Texas, Staples said producers are responding to the call for more production. Again, all the delays in the permitting process and conversations around divesting oil and gas has a chilling impact. We need to confirm that oil and gas is irreplaceable and essential to energy security and national security. In announcing the SPR release, the president also called for financial penalties on oil and gas companies that oil leases on public lands that aren't producing. The industry is also facing calls to pay a special tax on windfall profits and amid record high gasoline prices and high oil prices. The windfall profits tax is not a new concept, but its current proponents must not understand how the energy system works, or worse, are trying to capitalize on these unfortunate sets of circumstances to further their own anti-oil and gas agenda, Ed Longernek said. They may claim it's for the good of the people, but in reality it will only create additional uncertainty and drive energy prices even higher, directly hurting consumers and adding to already overwhelming inflationary pressures. Like Staples, Longernek called for long-term energy strategy. Instead of attacking the oil and gas industry, elected officials should spend their time and energy coming up with viable solutions to address the challenges at hand, including a long-term strategy for domestic energy production to meet both our own needs and support our allies abroad. Gratuitous taxes on the industry or even more ludicrous fining companies that are not using drilling permits on federal lands will only stymie production and further hinder our nation's energy security. He noted that officials may have tried to take short-term steps to address the nation's energy issues, but the release of the SPR will have a very limited and temporary impact on rising energy prices. The only solution is to remove regulatory hurdles and uncertainty and increase domestic production. Jason Moglen agreed the release from the SPR should have only a short-time benefit for consumers. It risks serious long-term implications if supplies are interrupted by more European conflict or by potential storms in the Gulf. A better plan to boost domestic production to meet the long-term needs of the country and the world starts with approving more pipeline and drilling permits. That includes not adding new taxes on the industry, which he said would raise energy and manufacturing costs, adding even more to record inflation, and wouldn't offer relief to U.S. taxpayers. Moglen urged the administration to follow Congress's clear intent to promote mineral exploration for the benefit of U.S. taxpayers. They do this by restarting leasing and working collaboratively with, not against, operators to balance global oil markets to reduce energy prices and runaway inflation. He called on Congress to work with, not against, the president's efforts to increase domestic production and build pipeline and liquefied natural gas infrastructure. Pastor celebrating 30 years of leading the Family of Fannin. This weekend, the Family of Fannin Church in Central Midland will celebrate the 30th anniversary of the arrival of its pastor, Doug Lamb. For three decades, Lamb has dabbled in book writing, played the drums at the occasional service, and most importantly, provided spiritual leadership for a willing congregation. He said the last 30 years has presented challenges to the church. For some, the church is no longer something to which people are committed. Participation in the life of a faith community is optional, he wrote during a question and answer with the Reporter Telegram. It's almost as if a church is what you do if something better doesn't come along. This seems to be the outgrowth of relativism and an increasing individualism that rests on our culture today. For a number of years, I've had the feeling that instead of looking for a community of faith to be involved in, people were looking for the best show in town. There appears to be a change taking place. Lately, at least at our church, people are looking to grow spiritually and to make connections with others. I don't know if this is the result of the isolation that happened during COVID or if God is stirring up something new. What has kept you at Fannin for three decades? Ultimately, God. I am a firm believer in the sovereignty of God. While I don't always understand what or why God is doing what he's doing, I know his plans and purposes always prevail. I am responsible to do the work of God has from placed in my hands to the best of my ability. Anything after that is on him. Has the role of the senior pastor changed over the last 30 years? It seems to me that the role of the pastor has shifted to include others. It used to be that the pastor was one who was expected to do all the teaching, baptisms, hospital visits, praying for members, and other ministry tasks. The shift that appears to have taken place is that many others have now joined in and do the work of the ministry alongside the pastor. This would include elders, deacons, teachers, and other leaders in the church. In my opinion, this is the way it should be. The scripture speaks of the church as a body with many parts, each doing its function. For the church, this means everyone should be involved in ministry, not just the pastor. This ties into another change I've observed. As you listen to people talk, it seems as though a lot of them have come to view the role of pastor as a CEO. Personally, I'm uncomfortable with that. Biblically speaking, a pastor is a spiritual leader, not a business executive. The focus should be on the lives of the people, not the amount of money raised. The church is not a business. The church is the bride of Christ. Can we learn from business practices? Probably. But a full-blown use of a business model doesn't fit the patterns of the New Testament church. There are some pastors who would disagree with me. That's okay. If they want, they can fly out to Midland in their private planes and we can talk about it. Talk about the growth and changes of Fannin during the last 30 years. Jean Baptiste Alphonse Carr wrote, Pluca Change, plus change, plus c'est la meme chose. That means the more things change, the more they stay the same. In one sense, after 30 years, nothing has changed. People are everywhere, including Midland, are separated from God by their sin and in need of a relationship of forgiveness and peace that comes through faith in Jesus. On a more practical level, several areas of growth come to mind. These areas of growth reflect the underlying changes we have seen. Early on, we put a contemporary service in place. When I arrived 30 years ago, the use of any instrument other than an organ was rare. By contrast, a contemporary worship style could include drums, guitars, and less formality. Fannin started a contemporary service in 1994. A couple of local pastors snickered at us. Funny how things turn around. Those pastors are gone, but the churches where they serve now have at least one contemporary worship service. Another change is that our ministerial staff has increased. We have talented, caring, experienced leaders serving here at Fannin. The ministry team, along with the administrative support we have in place now, is awesome. It is a privilege to serve this group of people. Spiritually, we're seeing a deeper growth take place in the lives of the people here. Spiritual growth is not always easy to see over just a few years. That is an advantage to staying in one place for so long. Numerically, we have had steady growth in our membership. Attendance has been up and down over the years with oil prices and most recently with COVID. While not explosive, God has added to our church as He sees fit. Facility-wise, Fannin built a worship center, a large building containing space for the student ministry, and a great fellowship hall. We also remodeled the entire inside of the facility several years ago. Currently, we have a project on hold to rebuild the children's facility and make room for a spacious foyer. Once things stabilize, we hope to raise the funds needed and move forward with construction. What do you think the next 30 years will be like? For me, the next 30 years look like work. Personally, I don't see myself retiring and sitting in a rocking chair. For some, that is the dream. For me, I prefer to work and serve others. The next 30 years of Fannin, I anticipate Fannin will move forward faithfully, helping people become more like Christ. Do you have an Easter message? Yes, every year we go over the Easter message of the resurrection of Jesus. It is the reason the church is here. The resurrection proves that Jesus is who He said He is. This Easter, we'll look at evidence that shows that belief in the resurrection is reasonable. Anyone who would like to visit with us at Easter is welcome to join us on April 17th at 8:30 a.m. or 11 a.m. Anything else you'd like to add, including books you've written? 2 years ago, my first book was released. It is titled Men and Me Too. While couched in the terms of the Me Too movement, it deals with the 6 key attitudes men need to change in order to treat women with more respect. Several women who have read the book have commented that the information can help women know what to expect from the men in their lives. Currently, I'm working on 2 other books. One is a book on leadership. It's based on key leadership traits you see throughout the Bible. The other book is a scripture-based devotional. Since both are in the writing phase, I don't have a release date for either one of them. Chef Height gears up to open a new restaurant. By J.C. Lewis. Chef Chip Height has been preparing to open Mr. Chip's Kitchen and Bar since December. The signage is up, the staff are trained, and now he's wrapping up details on his newest establishment downtown. He said Midlanders will need to keep an eye on their social media notifications for Mr. Chip's Kitchen and Bar opening announcement. Height gave the Reporter Telegram early access and the taste of what will be on the menu on Thursday afternoon. The previous Basin Burger building has been transformed with the help of Height's sister, Beth Harris. There's still more crane artwork to put up in the almost 5,600 square foot space. Guests will be able to order when entering or at the bar area. The space has been decorated with dragon print wallpaper, steamer basket lids, panel artwork, and green leather seating. Guests will also be able to order while seated with a QR code offered at each table. The restaurant will have a covered outdoor seating area with retractable garage doors in part of the patio. There will be cornhole, Connect Four, and Jenga on the patio. The restaurant is keeping the fireplace, which will be used during the colder months. The restaurant can seat up to 150 people. Mr. Chips will feature a variety of Asian fusion dishes like noodles, dumplings, and more. The bar will have a creative sake, wine, and cocktail offering. The sweet potato fries, crispy Brussels, Mongolian beef, and egg roll were offered during the sneak peek, paired with the John Woo, Paloma, Mr. Chips Manhattan, and Allstadt Kolsch from Fredericksburg. The sweet potato fries are seasoned with furikake, sesame seed and seaweed seasoning, and spicy aioli. The sweet potato fries were probably one of the most impressive dishes served and offered a different take on the appetizer. Opal's Table's famous crispy Brussels sprouts will be getting a different interpretation at the restaurant. Instead of Worcestershire glaze, Mr. Chip's Kitchen will have a soy glaze with fresh jalapenos and shaved almonds. The Mongolian beef should be on any spicy fanatic's must-eat list. The dish is served with green bell peppers and red Sichuan peppers. It might be best for those who don't like too much spice to leave the Sichuan peppers as a garnish instead of biting into one. Hite is also offering a larger-than-normal egg roll with sweet and sour sauce. Carrots, cabbage, and pork are wrapped in an egg roll wrapper, then fried to perfection. Like everything else on the menu, it's a delicious take on a classic. The bar will have specialty cocktail item menu featuring Mr. Chip's Manhattan and the John Woo, a take on a Paloma that has Sichuan salt rim. Tea2Go, Tea and Energy Greenwood, has announced its grand opening Friday at 1805 South County Road, Suite C1. The event will start at noon, and the first 25 customers will get a free gift card. The Mule Barn Cantina will launch a brunch menu Saturday starting at 10 a.m. The menu will feature sweet corn tamale cakes, breakfast nachos, poached huevos rancheros, tres leches French toast, and more. There will be mimosas, Arnold Palmer mimosa, Irish coffee, and sunset screwdrivers on the drink menu. Cake and berry tasting 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, 4400 West Loop 250 North. The event will feature cake and chocolate-covered strawberry tasting at Minchie's. The third annual crawfish cook-off with special guest Judge Steelcracker will be from noon to midnight on April 9th at the tailgate. The event will feature crawfish races, drink specials, giant judges, guest judges, a crawfish eating contest, live Cajun music, and more. There will also be a special performance by Treaty Oak Revival. Steelcracker is a TikTok star focusing on all things crawfish. Tickets are available at www.eventbrite.com. CAF High Sky Wing will host its 14th annual Hops and Props fundraiser from 7 to 10:30 on April 19th at Wright on 9600 Wright Drive. The event will feature more than 50 beers and appetizer sampling from area restaurants. Tickets are available at caafhopsprops.ticketleap.com. Church sending more than 285,000 meals to the Ukrainian war refugees. The Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland is packing 285,000 dehydrated meals and sending them to the Ukrainian border to feed refugees displaced by the Russian war. Through the church's partnership with Lifeline Christian Mission, the boxes of food will be packed by volunteers on April 29th and 30th, then shipped directly to war refugees in Eastern Europe. The GCR Church is inviting the entire Midland-Odessa community to participate in the food packing event. Everyone in Midland has been wanting something tangible, something practical, something real we can do to send support and relief to all those people impacted by the terrible violence and destruction in Ukraine, said Alan Stanglin. We're all watching the videos, reading the stories, seeing the news, it's everywhere, and we're all filled with an intense desire to do something helpful, something that will legitimately meet a genuine need and make a real difference in the lives of those victims. The community event is being called For Ukraine. Several churches and nonprofit organizations in Midland are providing volunteers to help pack the meals. Some local volleyball clubs and church youth groups are already signed up to participate. Ryan Rampton, the connections minister at the church, said we need 1,000 volunteers to fill up the food packing shifts. This is a perfect thing to do as a family. Kids as young as 5 can participate. Get together with your Bible study group. Pack boxes with your friends from work, from your gym, or your child's soccer team. This is one of the most direct ways anybody can offer assistance. We're going to fill a shipping container on site and immediately send that container to the refugees. Free online registration for the food packing shifts is at the gcrchurch.com/4Ukraine. Each shift lasts an hour and a half and includes a quick training session. Hair nets and gloves will be provided for each volunteer. First Presbyterian Church in Midland is joining GCR as partners in For Ukraine. Lead pastor Steve Shore said, as followers of Jesus, this is an amazing way to engage in Christ's mission to the world by feeding those who are hungry. In addition, when our churches partner together in practical forms of love and concern for those who are suffering, God multiplies the blessing. No training is necessary. It's just giving of your time and effort. Bring your friends and meet some new friends while experiencing the joy that comes in serving others. Typically, Lifeline coordinates food packing events so that boxes from several cities are combined into one shipping container before it's sent to its destination. But the GCR Church, which is taking on a whole container for our community to fill. We're not splitting this up. We're not farming it out to other cities or states. We're praying this can unite the Christians and the people of Midland together in love and worship and service to others. This is Midland's container. This is food from Midland for Ukraine. The GCR Church is collecting a special offering this Sunday, April 3rd, to fund the For Ukraine initiative. Donations are also being accepted at gcrchurch.com/4Ukraine. Pink the Basin event to return. The Pink the Basin luncheon will return in person this year after 2 years of waiting. The event will also be streamed virtually for those unable to attend. The luncheon has been moved up from October because of the guest speaker, Leanne Morgan. The event will start at 11 a.m. on April 12th at the Horseshoe. Morgan is a stand-up comedian who has garnered more than 1.5 million followers across social media, and her popular stand-up special, So Yummy, has reached more than 50 million viewers on YouTube. She has appeared on ABC's The View, Nick at Night's Funniest Mom, and toured with the Southern Fried Chicks. More about Morgan can be found at leannemorgan.com. Pink the Basin is a nonprofit organization that distributes funds to partnering hospitals throughout the Permian Basin that provide mammograms and other breast cancer diagnostic services. Tickets and sponsorships can be purchased at donorbox.org. Benefit luncheon. Eatery donates to West Texas Food Bank. During Raising Cane's grand opening of its largest Texas location on Tuesday, the company donated money to its first local charity. The West Texas Food Bank received a check for $2,500 from Cane's during the opening celebration. The restaurant will donate $10,000 to various organizations throughout the Odessa community during opening week. On Wednesday, the restaurant hosted on-site per pet adoptions with the Odessa Humane Society. Event honors women for community contributions. St. Joseph's Home Health honored 16 women of distinction whose contributions to the community deserve acclaim this week, according to a news release. The event was held Wednesday at Green Tree Country Club. The guest speaker was Brandy Bunting of Julian Gold. The event was to help celebrate International Women's Month. Those honored were Dr. Faye Armstrong Papp, Medical Center Health System, Dr. Liliana Andrade, Texas Tech, Isela Antillon, Univision, Mary Ann Bagley, Sunset Well Testing, Dr. Eliza Brown, Texas Tech, Sandra Aoff, Odessa Marriott, Irma Gutierrez, Medical Center Hospitalist, Melanie Holman, Vanessa Ramirez, Deputy Director of Public Works for Odessa, Pragna Schroff, Schroff Cardiology and Internal Medicine, Carol Uranga, Hispanic Heritage of Odessa, Dr. Sanctity Yadala, and Irma Olga, Osaka's Japanese steakhouse owner. Curtis Wayne Clark, always known as Wayne Clark, passed away peacefully in his sleep at the age of 92 on March 21st at Silver Wings Assisted Living on the west side of Albuquerque. Lily Marguerite White passed away on March 26th. Viewing will be at Lucas Funeral Home in Keller from 5 to 7 on Friday, April 1st. April 2nd will show 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Services will follow at 11 a.m. at the church. Juan Lopez passed away on March 30th. Viewing will be Saturday, April 2nd from 10 to 9 and Sunday, April 3rd from 10 to 9 with a rosary at 7 p.m. Sunday, all at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Monday, April 4th at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday. Oil reps call on Biden to relent. Quote, that's good, no, that's bad, end quote, comedy routine. The oil field of spring 2022 is riddled with contradictions. Prices are high, but so is uncertainty. Hiring is up, but manpower still vexes. Onshore exploration is increasing, but offshore development lags. The Biden administration has been a little more helpful lately. Department of Energy is still trumpeting its, quote, fossil fuels are passe, end quote, mantra. Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples, Panhandle Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Judy Stark, and Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President Jason Modglin says, individual oil and gas companies and trade associations are working hard to enhance production and stability, but their influence is slight compared to President Biden's and the federal government's. Quote, we need a complete reset from the administration to establish a strategic energy plan for America, with the president saying, we'll look for ways to facilitate the approval of pipelines rather than canceling them, including terminals for liquefied natural gas, and we will implement a plan for onshore and offshore leasing, end quote, said Staples, a former state representative and senator from Palestine and a former state agriculture commissioner. He said the war in Ukraine, quote, continues to create uncertainty in the marketplace, and uncertainty leads to volatility. Quote, a decade ago, countries in Europe traded energy security for energy ideology, and now they're suffering the consequences, end quote. So the energy crisis in Europe should be more than a wake-up call for the strategic importance of a steady, affordable energy supply. Energy should be treated as a national security asset and not a liability. The ex-OGA leader said manpower and supply chain issues are limiting growth and access to capital after years. National rig counts are up from 205 to 326 and from 417 to 670, end quote. Asked the state of the man camps for oil field workers that got so much attention a few years ago, Staples said companies have been trying to offer permanent residencies, but a recent report indicated that 1,500 man camp beds in the Permian Basin are full. He said the political buzz in Austin is favorable to the industry, but the picture in Washington, quote, is murky and unclear. Quote, we're increasing exports to our European allies, end quote, he said. Quote, now we need to back that up with orders that will last for the long term. The high prices are the result of poor policy decisions over the years that are now exaggerated by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We need to unleash American energy if we're going to have a steady supply here at home and for our allies across the globe, end quote. Quoting data from the Texas Workforce Commission, Staples said upstream employment like the geologists, drilling rigs, and service crews of the basin grew by 5,100 in February, which was the highest spike in over a decade and the second highest jump in 32 years. Quote, since the low point in employment in September of 2020, the industry has added 24,900 Texas upstream jobs, and job growth months have outnumbered decline months by 15-2, end quote, he said. Quote, with 181,900 upstream jobs, February 2022 jobs were up by 20,700 or 12.8% from February of 2021, end quote.
Independent Petroleum Association of America Chief Operating Officer Jeff Eshelman said from Washington Monday that the industry, quote, is ready to do its part to address the energy challenges that the United States and our allies face. And signals from the federal government are standing in the way of progress, end quote, Eshelman said. Quote, it's difficult to plan years-long, multi-million-dollar exploration and production when the Biden administration sends mixed messages at every step of the way, end quote. Oil Producers and Royalty Owners Association said from Amarillo that the biggest problem, quote, is that you can't just turn oil and gas off with a spigot. Stark said there are infrastructure issues with trying to avoid moving oil and gas by trucks, even in the basin. While the Biden administration has made a few concessions lately, it needs more coherence and consistency to develop a productive long-term relationship. Quote, we're still hearing backlash with what I call programmed responses, end quote, she said. Quote, I got an email from the Energy Department last week that it's more evident now than ever that we need to divest ourselves from the fossil fuel industry. Explaining that the administration has lifted some restrictions on drilling on federal lands and, quote, is being a little more friendly on resetting permits, end quote, Stark said finding adequate manpower remains problematic. Quote, it's not as severe as it was because excellent pay and benefits are making it worth the risk to come back into the industry, end quote, she said. Quote, there are still some smaller to mid-sized man camps and there are some in the Midland-Odessa area. We don't want to see repercussions from high prices per barrel on oil because those that add pressure with high inflation, end quote. Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President John Modglin of Austin reported that despite the challenges, the basin will keep enhancing this summer in West Texas and eastern New Mexico. Quote, the industry is doing about as much as it can to balance the global markets, but we have seen incredible price fluctuations, end quote, Modglin said. He said the war in Ukraine is causing even more instability in the capacity of the industry's midstream sector. Moving oil and gas to the Gulf Coast should be increased. Quote, that creates big challenges when production naturally declines and we are not adding enough new production to satisfy the demand, end quote, Modglin. He said the Biden administration, quote, has walked back the proposed rule that would have hamstrung pipelines in the Northeast. They have also opened up the LNG trade in Europe from Texas and Louisiana, end quote, Modglin said. Quote, we have a number of physical constraints that the state and federal governments could help with, end quote. Notwithstanding the bump in oil field employment, he said, quote, we lost a significant amount of jobs in 2018 and 19, and that's limiting our ability to get crews out into the field. Quote, we don't have quite the labor that we once did, end quote. PAC announces backing for bond. 20 ISD officials and community members on hand, Odessans for Education announced its support for the upcoming school bond election set for May 7th. The Political Action Committee can advocate Community Federal Credit Union Operations and Training Building Community Room. The main speakers were co-chair Lorraine Perryman and superintendent Scott Murray, who reviewed reasons for the bond election. The $398,255,000 bond issue will include two propositions. Proposition A for $215,255,000 for maintenance and lifecycle repair slash replacement for school district buildings for $130,255,000. Construction of a new career and technical education center for $70 million and classroom technology upgrades for $15 million. $183 million would be for a new comprehensive high school on 100 acres at Yukon and Faudry Roads. The high school would have a 2,500 to 2,800 student capacity and be six. Odessa and Permian high schools have about 4,000 students each. Quote, we are horribly overcrowded in ECISD, and we have learned that that affects safety and security within buildings. It is unsafe to have overcrowded facilities, end quote, Perryman said. She said the last time a high school was built in Odessa, Dwight D. Eisenhower was president. Quote, we're a growing district, elementary, middle school, and high school, and we right now have the ability to accommodate growth at the elementary and middles because we can put portables there. That is not the right solution, but we have land on those properties to add more portables, so that's what will happen. And at the high schools, he said there is no space to add portables because their land is completely filled. Well, that's why we have 38 teachers on those two campuses that are floating because there is no room to add 38 portables on either one of those pieces of property. Worst first scenario. The greatest need that we have because of our growth is at the high school level, and that's our why, end quote, Murray said. Perryman said the bond committee was well aware that ECISD needs more elementary and middle schools. He said three of the middle schools need to be replaced because of the facility condition and the age of the buildings, but, quote, we can't afford to do it all, end quote. Quote, so from a community perspective, We had to decide what we are going to go for first, and our high school principals were very impassioned about what their needs are. They told a very compelling story, end quote, Perryman said. On the CTE side, Perryman said the facility that was in place is very different from the one in the bond issue. Quote, that one only had the opportunity to go to that school, and when you graduated with a diploma from that school, end quote, she said. What the district learned is that students want choices. Most of them wanted their diploma to be from OHS or PHS. Quote, so this is a hybrid where they can stay at their high school. They can graduate from their high school. They will go in and out and block scheduling for about half a day to take their classes and go back. Then there are kids that can choose to spend the entire day. That is their home campus, and they will graduate from that CTE facility. So kids get to choose, families get to choose where they want to go, how they want to do it, end quote, Perryman. 100 students who attend George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa in what was the Career Center building, and the rest are career and technical education students and administrators. Quote, what the technology is and what those kids need have changed. That's what the new standard will be, end quote, Perryman said. Murray said the new high school will allow the district to have three high schools that are similar in size. Perryman said about 1,000 students would come out of OHS and out of Permian to the new school. It will take 3 or 4 years to build the new high school, so she noted that it will be full when it opens. Raymond Armendariz said the whole bond is a lot of money. Quote, that's $400 million at a time when inflation's up to the highest it's ever been. A lot of blue-collar workers can't be here to hear your presentation. I had to take a few hours off mine. That's all well and good, but that's a lot of money just for 2,800 students and maintenance, end quote, Armendariz said. Perryman said the community would also be getting a career and technical center. Murray said there could be 400 students that are there full-time, and more than 1,000 would be coming in and out. Murray said this could create space for up to 300 middle school students. Quote, and so that will alleviate all of the overcrowding that we currently have in the high schools we serve. In addition, the opening of the new CTE center will also create space in the existing CTE facility. We'll be able to take some middle school students from our middle schools and relieve some overcrowding that we have at the middle schools, end quote, Murray said. He acknowledged that it is a lot of money, but the longer they wait, the more it will cost because of the current economic conditions. Committee member Charles Cotton said the problem is, quote, we've kicked the can down the road so far, we can't kick it, end quote. He noted that when the committee report was done, they found several million more dollars in needs than the proposed bond amount. Murray said the report showed there was $881 million worth of maintenance needed, and that didn't include a... Perryman and Murray noted that this bond will not cover all the school district's needs. And to paraphrase Perryman, it's just the first bite of the elephant. Officials have said this could be the start of a five-year bond cycle. The ECISD website says district leaders anticipate this bond will create a tax rate increase of 15 cents, and for a home with a taxable value of $100,000, would equate to a tax increase of approximately $12 per month. There would be no tax increase on residents' homesteads for taxpayers 65 and older, as state law dictates that the tax rate and the amount paid on a residence are frozen when the person turns 65 years old, applies for the exemption, and is approved by the Ector County Appraisal District. ECISD gives local taxpayers a 20% homestead exemption, which is the maximum allowed by law. Early voting for the May 7th election will run from April 25th through May 3rd and be held only at the Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street. Man of shooting another local man to death in July, the jury took just 90 minutes to convict Rondale Gerard Ferris, 41, of first-degree murder. Felony murder because they found he was a felon in illegal possession of a firearm and engaging in organized crime because they believe he's a member of the Crips, a criminal street. Ector County District Attorney Melissa Williams told jurors during closing arguments that the only way they'd be able to acquit Ferris in the death of Tregonale White was if they, quote, disregarded the laws of physics and their own eyes, end quote. White, 41, was shot to death outside a convenience store at Highway 80 and 8th Street on July 13th, 2018. Williams and her co-counsel, Scott Turner, based their case on the testimony of Thurman Williams, who came forward more than 3 years after the shooting to say he saw Ferris shoot the victim, and surveillance tapes that showed White dropping to the ground seconds after Ferris exited the store and shots are heard ringing. They also relied heavily on the testimony of a deputy medical examiner. Testified the three shots that struck White were fired within less than 3 to 4 feet based upon the soot and gunpowder left on his face. Prosecutors provided evidence indicating Ferris shot White after being alerted by Christopher George that White was engaged in a fistfight with his former brother-in-law, Michael Dante Taylor, and White's brother was fighting Ferris's brother, Gilbert Silver. Defense attorney Jeff Nicholson told jurors that he can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt Taylor-White Taylor shot White, but it is possible he did. Nicholson also told jurors that the state's only actual eyewitness, Thurman Williams, testified because he wanted to, quote, get his butt out of jail. Quote, just being there doesn't make him guilty, end quote, Nicholson said of his client. Block anyone from seeing the gunman as he actually fires the weapon. The prosecutors told jurors the video and the location of the spent shell casings prove Ferris was the only possible. The video shows no one else within 4 feet of the victim at the time the shots were fired, and the angles the bullets entered White's vehicle show they had to have come from Ferris, Melissa Williams told jurors. The fact that the empty shell casings fell roughly 2 feet from each other and so close to White's body support the video's images showing Ferris running toward White and then away from the scene. That physical evidence also supports the testimony of Thurman Williams, the prosecutor said. Thurman Williams testified Wednesday he had seen Taylor, Silver, and the White brothers arguing at Club Tequila earlier in the evening, and he witnessed Ferris shooting White after he stopped to buy cigarettes at the store. Son, who has a law firm in Lubbock, reminded jurors that three women, Claudia Perez, Barshavia Wallace, and Indacia Loudermill, testified they didn't see White arguing with anyone at the bar that night. Perez testified she saw Taylor arguing with Tregonale White that night, leave and return with a gun. However, she told jurors she, Wallace, and Loudermill were already fleeing the parking lot in her car when the shots rang out, so she doesn't know who fired the shots. Wallace and Loudermill testified they didn't see the shooting either. Nicholson also pointed out White's brother, Roderick White, told police an hour after the incident the man who fought his brother and later shot him had braids and was wearing a tan and burgundy shirt. Ferris is clearly wearing a blue shirt on the surveillance tape. When being questioned by the state, Roderick White blamed his emotional state for the confusion. Yes, he identified Taylor as the man who fought his brother that night, but he did not shoot his brother, he said. While George is awaiting trial on a murder charge in the case, authorities have never been able to locate Silver or Taylor, nor have the men been charged. Ferris's girlfriend, Maisha Morrill, is also awaiting trial. According to prosecutors, she sent money to Ferris in California prior to his arrest through Silver. He's been charged with hindering apprehension. Roderick White told jurors he came to Odessa from Lubbock to celebrate his birthday with his brother. He testified both of them had been members of the Bloods criminal street gang and had spent time in prison, but they were trying to put that life behind them. Tregonale had been out of prison for about 18 months after serving nearly 20 years in prison for murder and was going to church and supporting himself by collecting and selling scrap metal, Roderick White said. He was trying to transform his life into something different, end quote, he said. Dr. Tasha Greenberg, a deputy Tarrant County medical examiner, said White sustained three gunshot wounds. One grazed the area between his nose and upper lip, one entered a nostril and exited his left cheek, and the third entered the top of his head. The case is being presided over by visiting Judge Rodney Sutter-White. What's going on? Fish fry and food drive. Knights of Columbus, 17679, has scheduled a fish fry and food drive from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at Holy Redeemer Parish Hall, 2633 Conover Avenue. Menu will include fried fish, coleslaw, hush puppies, cornbread, dessert, and drink. Plates are $12 or support the House of Mercy, $10 a plate when two non-perishable items are donated. Visit koc17679.now.site/home. First Baptist Church, Odessa, 709 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled a foster parent night out event from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. today. This is a free event. To register now or for more information, tinyurl.com/yv59zphu. Concert. Blues guitarist Carvin Jones is scheduled to perform live in concert from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. today at the Yucca Theater, 208 North Colorado Street, Midland. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/ykcdtvn2. Break Free Breakfast Fundraiser. Odessa First Assembly, 1101 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled Break Free Breakfast Fundraiser from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Saturday. Donations will be accepted during this event, and all funds raised will go to help with summer outreach. Food is first come, first serve. For more information, call 432-332-2559 or visit odessafirstassembly.com. Permian Basin String Quartet returns with String Theory. The Permian Basin String Quartet will make its return for the second performance of the sold 3 p.m. Sunday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center in the Re Great House Recital Hall. The Permian Basin String Quartet is the resident quartet of the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, and is comprised of the principal string players of the orchestra. The members have developed a loyal audience and a reputation as a leading ensemble in the Permian Basin. This information detailed will explore the profound ideas of death and grief while also bringing peace and nostalgia throughout the music. The performance will feature three different pieces, including the string quartet in B minor, Op. 11 by Samuel Barber, as well as Strange Beloved Land by Paul Wionko, and string quartet in D minor, D810, Death and the Maiden by Franz Schubert. The Permian Basin String Quartet is composed of conductor and violinist Alejandro Gomez Guillen, violinist Sarah Craner, cellist Amy Huzjak, and violinist Conrad Sklar. Sklar talked about some of the many things the audience can expect from Sunday's performance. Quote, a lot of the music is written around the program in Samuel Barber's String Quartet in D minor. End quote, Sklar said. Quote, the second movement of that quartet is the adagio for strings that a lot of us learned in high school. It's very fun to play. End quote. Barber is regarded as one of the great American composers of the 20th century. His first composition at the age of 7. Harmony, end quote, Sklar said. With polyrhythm, it's almost like hearing a monologue. It's language more than it is typical musical tonality, end quote. The final piece will be Schubert's string quartet in D minor, which Sklar described as a, quote, death march, and sort of tells the facilitating story about the interaction of death and a woman. Schubert's quartet has been described as a, quote, pillar of romantic era chamber music and a transitional era chamber. End quote. Quote, it's a really remarkable piece and a lot of fun to explore this music, and there are a lot of nice melodies for everyone, and that's something that not everyone gets, so that's also nice, end quote. Sklar's quartet was back in November. Sklar said preparing for this performance has been, quote, nothing but fun, end quote. Every musician is an incredibly high-level musician in the quartet, Sklar said. Quote, we're a wide range of education, focuses, and professional experiences, and everybody prepares at a high level. We all get along really well. We get to make really fun musical decisions. There are also a lot of fun technical decisions that a lot of times we don't get to make in a young professional quartet. And it really makes very fun music making. We get to experiment with the music and we get to be spontaneous, and it's just nothing but fun to do, end quote. Sklar joined the string quartet at the beginning of the season last fall. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will change its name to the West Texas Symphony this summer. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/2p87dxd. Obituaries. Ida Beth Ida Armstrong, Odessa, Texas. Ida Beth Ida Armstrong, 67, of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life on March 30th, 2022. She was born on July 29th, 1954, in Rankin, Texas, to Jeff and Martha Thompson. Those left to cherish her memory are lifelong friend Scott Armstrong of Killeen, Texas, son Avery Armstrong, Andrea, of Flower Mound, Texas, daughter Amy Barnes Jeffrey of Odessa, Texas, brother Donnie Thompson Naomi of Kermit, Texas, sister Emily McElveen Monty of Crane, Texas, grandchildren Avon Armstrong, Allison Barnes, and Rylan Barnes, and several nieces and nephews, Chris Penn, Holly McElveen, Lindsay Kirk, Zachary Thompson, and Levi Thompson. She is preceded in death by both parents, Jeff and Martha Thompson, and sister Becky Jones. A memorial service will be held Saturday, March 2nd, 2022 at 11 o'clock a.m. at Stonegate Fellowship, 4240 Preston Smith Road, Odessa, Texas, 79762, officiated by Pastor Stephen Kane. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa, Texas. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. Janice Amaris Cesaris Vila, Odessa. Janice Amari Cesaris Vila, 2 years of age, of Odessa, Texas, passed peacefully from this life on the morning of March 27, 2022. Visitation will be Thursday, March 31st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Rosary will be Thursday, March 31st at 7 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, 6801 East Business 20 in Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, April 1st at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church, 2633 Conover Avenue in Odessa, Texas, with Father Fernando officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Janice was born in Lubbock, Texas, to Denise Cesaris Vila and Paulo Vila Jr. on March 2, 2020. Janice is preceded in death by her brother, Ariel Valentine Vila, Aunt Blanca Mercedes Vila, cousin Beyonce Denis Vila, great-grandpa Juan Carrillo, great-grandma Celestina Cesaris, great-grandpa Victor Vila, great-grandma Hermer Hilda Vila, great-grandma Maria Paz Gonzalez, and great-grandpa Herminio Gonzalez. Janice is survived by her parents, Denise Cesaris Vila and Paulo Vila Jr., her sisters, Giselle and Jasmine, her brother, Polito, maternal grandparents, Anna and Juan Cesaris, paternal grandparents, Paulo Sr. and Gabina Vila, uncles Juan Cesaris, Joel Cesaris, Eric Ramos, Eddie Vila, and Gilbert Ramirez, aunts Mayra Cesaris, Karina Ramos, and Rosie Ramirez, and cousins Ericito and Ilam Ramos, JC and Jaylania Cesaris, Tito and Madeline Ramirez, Hiramcito, Harvey and Haxel Ramirez, and Eddie Vila. Paul Bears will be Polito Vila, Juan Cesaris, Paulo Vila Sr., and Eric Ramos. Memorials and flowers may be sent to Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Spencer David Everett. Odessa. Spencer David Everett, 48, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March 30th, 2022 in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Elwanda Walls Davis. Midland. Elwanda Walls Davis, 93, of Midland, died Tuesday, March 29th, 2022 in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m., April 2nd, 2022, Lamesa Memorial Park Cemetery in Lamesa, Texas. Reverend Gwen Aldridge is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Terry Dale Hayes, Odessa. Terry Dale Hayes, 66, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 26, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Obits of Midland. Gina Gail Cassiri, San Antonio. Regina Gail Cassiri, 66, of San Antonio, died Monday, March 28, 2022, in San Antonio. Funeral service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday, April 2, 2022. River of Hope Christian Fellowship Church. Burial follows at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Pastor Renee Phillips is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jesse Lee Morris, Midland. Jesse Lee Morris, 80, of Midland, died Thursday, March 24, 2022, in Midland. Chapel service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Saturday, April 2, 2022, Alexandria Temple in Midland. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Obits of Midland.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, March 26, 2022. Viewpoints. We already know how to fix our schools. Most important step is focusing on those at the helm of classrooms and campuses. Ronnie Scott, contributor. Let's review. We need to fix our failing schools sooner rather than later. If we are divided from our school district, our district will fail. Whether that division expresses itself as outright hatred or simple disrespect, we will fail. We have not spent enough to adequately maintain our facilities or get ahead of our growth. We could spend up to $1.3 billion, but it is okay to start with a lesser amount. We need to get started, though. There are hundreds of opinions about how to fix a struggling school system. Most will fail when applied broadly across a district. There are only a handful of things that seem to work consistently, sustainably, and at scale to improve a struggling school system. Everyone already knows these things. They are obvious, after all. Knowing something and pursuing it with an unrelenting focus are different things. Want to be successful? Data suggests we block out most other things and do the work below extraordinarily well. We have not done any of these well for quite a while. Reflect on that. Teachers, principals, and staff are the most important thing. Most discussions about academic improvement need to begin and end with the importance of teachers, principals, and staff. Programs, calendars, bonds, and school choice, while important, are secondary to the people at the helm of our campuses and classrooms and those in support of those roles. Recruit as well as we possibly can, relentlessly train and develop, hold people accountable for their performance without creating an atmosphere of fear. Fire the few when necessary, but create a culture of respect for people that permeates every decision and every action. Instructional consistency and simplicity are next. Good principals and teachers need to have space for creativity, but a simple, repeatable form of instructional methods and a coherent year-on-year curriculum are critically important. Some things will have to give. We need fewer choices and fewer programs. Let's instead choose to teach a simple, foundational curriculum and choose to do it well across the district. Simplicity, consistency, and coherence. This consistency is often at odds with a system of great schools, by the way. A focus on pre-K through third grade makes a difference. A unique program that could be a real difference maker will soon be unveiled in Midland. It is the result of a multiple-year collaborative effort among several organizations, each of whom focus on solutions rather than merely problem identification. But it is only a start. We will be reluctant to focus in this area because it feels like all grades deserve equal attention. All grades do deserve attention, but pre-K through third will be a long-term difference maker. Reform takes courage that most of us don't have. Data is important. If we are going to use data, and we should, we need to use it as a tool and avoid the temptation to weaponize it. The goal of data is to improve outcomes, not penalize people. In return, our staff can't get defensive if they don't like what the data is telling them. Use data as the tool it is intended to help us get better. The school board needs to narrow its role, then perform that role well. The board's primary roles are to hire the superintendent, hold her patiently accountable, then shield and support the team. Systemic success takes a minute. That is the patient part. It requires courage to persevere, to not try something new every other year. For accountability, board-level measures should be straightforward and few. This will be uncomfortable because it is different than what we do now. A superintendent needs a few key measures to be held accountable, though she will have a host of measures for her internal use. Define her goals succinctly, then give her space. Resist the urge to micromanage. In terms of shield and support, does every item someone is mad about or interested in have to come before the board? Do we really need a committee for so many things? Do board meetings have to be a marathon? Hire well, hold people patiently accountable, then shield the noise from the district's professionals so they can do their jobs. The board will absolutely play a key role in our success. It just may be a narrower, simpler role than it has been. It might actually become fun again to be a board member. Facilities matter, kind of. What would I do? While it would be nice to have two new high schools, I would probably phase in what needs done. Maybe a phase one of $500 million to address deferred maintenance and build a new high school. We are lucky to have Dr. Angelica Ramsey and her team, and we need to act like it. Let's show them some grace and have some patience. I think it will be worth it. That's it. Hope the finale was worth waiting for.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.